Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
All right, you already know what you're listening to because you just clicked it on your phone or whatever. This is Toxic and Problematic. My name's Slimfast. Lazlo's here, and today we have another guest in studio that we've been very excited about for weeks now.
Right.
The legendary local defense attorney, Mr. David Bell. How are you?
You know, first of all, I'm really great. Let me just say how excited I am because walking in here, meeting your producer and you guys, the amount of criminal law business in this room alone, you know, we've got a small child is going to help me pay.
Yes.
Right. I just want to thank you guys for letting me be.
Well, that's you're right. It's a gold mine in here between us and our listeners. There's money to be made, my friend.
Just in this room alone with you guys and your producer, I've got plenty to do. So I really appreciate that.
I know I mentioned it before we went on the air, but when we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Lazlo had contacted you were going to come in and do the podcast, I got a text from a guy I hadn't heard from forever. And he said, wait a second, did I hear you're getting David Bell on? He goes, he is a beast of an attorney. He said, that dude absolutely saved my ass. I was caught red-handed. I was dying laughing. I was like, yeah, he's coming on. He's like, what a small world. He's the best. Mm-hmm. So we're excited that you're here.
That was my dad, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
So, you know, we over the years, we have questions constantly like, oh, man, I wish we could ask an attorney. I wish there was an attorney here. But just to get started, I guess, because you are a local defense attorney, what is, as a person who's been an attorney for a while, what is the most Kansas City thing about being a defense attorney here? You know, is there something that kind of separates being a defense attorney in a city like this as opposed to a small town or whatever? You know, you look around and
you went to college at NYU, so you've kind of got a feel for both of them, right?
Yeah. I was in Philadelphia for undergrad and college for NYU, or law school for NYU. I think what I found here, which makes it really interesting, is we have to deal with a multiple jurisdiction. So I'll do federal Kansas, mm-hmm. which is its own separate system. I'll do federal Missouri. I'll do Jackson County, which is Missouri. And then I'll do Wyandotte County and Johnson County, which are Kansas. And everyone's its own little fiefdom. And then there's municipalities within that. So all these little cities and things like that. So you have to be familiar with a million different jurisdictions.
And all
and
the
a million
judges.
Different and the judges and the prosecutors and the probation officers. And the systems and everyone's just a little bit different. So you got to keep up to date on all.
But once you pass the bar in Missouri and you pass the bar in Kansas, you do that separately, I assume.
Yeah.
And then you can practice law all across the state.
You're good to go. The bar to be a criminal defense attorney is very low. I'll just say that right now. So I mean, you can just set up a shingle and just say, "Hey, I'm a criminal defense attorney."
Right. Okay. So as a local,
I want to ask you real quick: how hard is the bar? Because you hear like it's so incredibly hard, but then I'm also like, is that just something that people say, like mechanics? Like when you go and you're like, how do I fix my car? And they're like, look, you wouldn't understand. And they do it. But once you learn how to do it, you're like, I could have done that. So, is the bar really that hard?
So, all right, real quick. So, the bar I was talking about being a criminal defense attorney, that was just like,
right,
the,
yes.
Like the high jump bar is very low.
Right.
The bar you're talking about really honestly sucks.
Really?
It may be one of the worst experiences of my life. I had to go down, I think it was to Jeff City for 2 days. You sit in a room your whole life, or at least the past 7 years, college and law school, is to pass this thing. And if you don't pass, you can't work. It's literally your ticket. And so you go through and you take all these multiple choice questions that all seem to have like two answers that are going to work. And then you got to write out a bunch of essays. And sometimes
that's
you don't
the
know
thing
what
that sounds scary. Right.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you can't study for all of it. So sometimes you don't know. You're like, you read this thing and you're like, oh crap, man, I don't even know. What do I do? So you just start writing and you just writing. And then if you're not religious, you become religious at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You start praying, man. That's the best you do. It sucks.
Cause being a lawyer sounds awesome, but I'm not smart. My brother's a lawyer and I asked him about the bar, and the example he gave me was one of the essay questions. Like, well, I mean, I don't know how hard it is. I would say the hard parts or what people might think is hard is stuff like this. And he gave me an example and they gave some scenario about someone with taxes and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then you write like a 2-page essay. I was like, oh. So this is never going to be obtainable to me.
I could never
do that.
One of the hard parts was you have to be prepared for different areas. There's like family law, contract law, criminal law, constitutional law, contract law, and they won't tell you what's going to be on the test.
Okay.
And so you got to be immersed in all this stuff, and some of the stuff you didn't take in law school. I didn't take family law in law school, but then you got to be aware of it. And then there's some differences between Kansas and Missouri, and I went to school in New York. So all that factors in. Plus, it's just a pressure cooker. I think maybe 50% of your score is just showing up and finishing it.
Okay.
And my guess is the rest of it probably. Thank God I did okay. I think I got high enough in Missouri, so I went over to Kansas to take that. Enough points were there. So if I screwed up too much on that, passed on that and I was out. I'm done. So,
okay.
Got it.
Thank goodness.
Now, you are in New York. You go to New York for law school.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And do you know at that point that you want to be a criminal defense attorney or?
So you know, it's funny. So I was in New York. I was in law school there, and I went to become a tax lawyer.
Okay.
So I was a tax lawyer, and I came back to Kansas City. I got LM in tax, which is some additional law degree in tax. I came back to Kansas City where I'm from, and I worked at a big firm here, and I was doing memos on, you know, what happens to a net operating loss when an LLC and an S corporation merge.
Right.
Do you know the answer, Laszlo?
No, I don't.
No one gives a shit. That was part of the problem.
That's the answer. No one cares.
But they pay a lot for that.
Right.
And so I found that intellectually stimulating, but the warmth wasn't there for me.
Right.
I needed to be something where I was out there defending people. And I thought about what I would do. And the place I wanted to be a real lawyer at was at the public defender's office in Jackson County. So I went to the Jackson County Public Defender's Office and tried murders, rapes, sex stuff, all this stuff for 6 or 7 years. I loved it. That was 25 years ago. My parents are still getting over that, by the way. I went from a big firm to a public defender's office. But it was awesome. I loved it, man. The feel of it was great. And, you know, we get a lot of issues. Like, people are like, oh, I don't want a public pretender. I want a real attorney. I got that when I was there. Dude, all the time. People are like, oh, I don't want a public defender. I want to get a real attorney. I'm like, well, who do you think I am, number one? But two, those are the ones with the passion and the heart. And a lot of people don't realize that. They want to go out and pay me now. People are like, well, I have a public defender. I want to pay you. And I'm like, hey, they're really good public defenders. And the reason I know that is because I was one.
But so right. The story I always hear about public defenders is not that they're bad people or not that they're not passionate, but that they're so overworked, they don't have enough time to dedicate to some of these cases.
So who out there is not overworked right now? Is anybody out there in any job, any capacity? But the public defenders, the issue, I think sometimes is like bedside manner. So right now you're paying me by the hour. I'll go to court. I'll do whatever you want to call and talk to me about your problems. Let's talk about it. But as a public defender, you only have so much time in your day. So the people that don't have the money to get out wind up sitting. So they wind up sitting in jail or whatever. But there's no pressure on me as a public defender to get things done quicker, to get results quicker, or whatever. It was just the problem was when you have a murder case or you have 15 murder cases, the 14 of them are going to have to sit and wait for a bit until we get through this one, and then we got to the next one. So they wind up sitting for a few years. And that's where I think people get a little bit bothered by it.
No, as a guy who's been arrested several times, like a lot, right? You know, and been in trouble, I had that feeling about public defenders.
Right.
Well, the thing that what you did mention, which always clicked with me, is like, you know, when you were a public defender, if you'd have walked in, I'm like, this guy, I think he probably works in the same office as the prosecutor and the judge. And like, is he really going to take them to task on something? Because he's got to deal with them every day, every week. He's got to go to a happy hour afterwards. Right. And they're like, you're a real dick today, David. You know what I mean? It's like you're working in the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that always made me feel like maybe I'm not getting the best. Where if I got some guy who come in and be like, I don't give a shit what she says.
Right.
I'm about to pull the carpet out from underneath him. I felt better with that, even though it may not be true.
So that's an awesome, that's a great observation. The reality is, so people think like, oh, like when I get done here, I'm going to go work. I'm going to go play golf with the judge and the prosecutor, and we're all going to get together, maybe have sex later or something like
right,
that.
Yeah, hey, right?
Crazy shit like that. The reality is I don't play golf. No, I mean, right. Also, I'm not,
right.
We're not, the reality is this, the people that generally I find that go become a public defender, that's generally just how they lean. That's in the spark in their heart, whatever their motivation is, they kind of lean to defending people. The people that go in the prosecutor's office just to have a, they're just drawn to a different part of the system. And so the reality is, at least at the beginning, you don't do a lot of hanging out. And it's okay to piss people off as long as you're doing it for the right reasons.
Okay.
And so, in fact, you were probably pushed harder as a public defender to do what you got to do and don't worry about who you're pissing off. So
right.
It's actually kind of the opposite to a certain extent, if that makes sense. So, but now what I find as I get older, you wind up learning to fight about the things that really matter, not about everything. So the first, when I walked as a public defender in 01, I was like, every cop's lying, every prosecutor's bullshitting me the whole bit. Well, it turns out that's not true, okay?
Right.
But you start out like that, and you keep pushing. So I absolutely know where you're coming from on that, but the reality is we don't have that, particularly in Kansas City.
So you view the prosecutors kind of the way we defendants. I know not everyone in the general public views prosecutors as the bad guys because they should be the good guys. But guys like us who have needed defense attorneys in the past,
well, we've always
kind of
think
of prosecutors as like, these are people who are just trying to get the numbers. They're trying to get people locked up. That's what they want on their resume. They don't care if the person's innocent right. or guilty. And the defense attorney is someone who cares about the truth. You know?
Well, yeah, you said two things there, and you said right. one, I think you said they're just drawn to the defense. We've said that forever. At some point when you're little, I really think you're either fall into the prosecutor camp or the defender camp. Even if you've done nothing wrong, you're sure. like, what side do you kind of see more clearly?
Well,
and I'm like, I just grew up. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a defense camp. I, you know,
it's
I
like
mean,
an Elvis
I
or a Beatles
that.
Guy.
That makes sense to me. Where the prosecutor, I'm like, why are you? You know, it felt like my older sister. Like, why are you always trying to get me in trouble? Like, yeah, yeah.
So,
lay
so,
off a little bit. Times are tough.
So I found. So here's what I find. There's really good prosecutors. I would say the people that are prosecutors I know are generally pretty good people. I believe that, and I think they just view the world or they want to view the system from a different angle. Than I do. I haven't seen prosecutors that are wanting to get the numbers generally or just could give a crap about people because a lot of times the prosecutors, their focus is more on the victim necessarily. Listen, guys, I represented people that have a few bodies on them that mm-hmm. are in prison. And for those individuals that can't handle themselves in society, if they're just going to go out and kill people, maybe those people probably need,
we need
to
prosecutors.
Be. Right,
yeah.
they, when you, well, so maybe those people need to be in prison. But,
yeah.
but I don't like the idea of me putting them there.
Sure.
So maybe the system has to do that. But I don't want to be that person doing
you
it.
You have to give them the defense that they constitutionally
correct.
Have a right to. Right?
Well, and I'll tell you where it comes down to. And I know people like, you can't handle the truth, and they love the movies and stuff like that. But it's affirming the person as a human being seems to be the biggest value that I provide. Yes, I go out and help people on the legal side. But a lot of times, listen, most of the people that are arrested and charged, the evidence is there. I'm just telling you guys. It's not like they're flipping a coin, or at least I haven't seen it. The issue is more, how do you help this person through a system that's looking to... or not necessarily looking to, but actually does dehumanize. How do you make that person into a human being that they are and help them through the system? And part of that is defending them zealously, right? Defending them as a human being. And also to the extent the system is screwed up, they have the wrong person, or they don't have the evidence, you got to fight, man.
Well, that brings me my next question. Is it harder to defend someone that you know is guilty or someone that you believe is innocent?
Oh, shit. That's a great question. It is harder to defend someone that you're confident is innocent.
Okay.
Because the pressure is on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? At least if you're if someone who's guilty and you know they're guilty, but I will tell you, at least in that situation, if you lose, you're like, well, they're guilty.
Yeah.
That happens very rarely where I go to trial on someone who is absolutely guilty and I know they're guilty. Usually, so like 90% of cases, here's another secret, and don't tell anybody this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Microphone's not on, is it?
Nobody listens to this.
Okay, good. No one listens. Like 90% of all cases, criminal and civil, resolved by agreement. They resolve by plea agreement. So we focus on the trial thing. That's part of it, and I do go to trial, but the most of the stuff I do is resolving by agreement. And so as a result, representing people that have done it and the evidence is there, that's the standard. And what is the result supposed to be? Like, what should happen to them? Should they be fucked for the rest of their lives? Like, should they have something on their record that's going to prevent them from getting a job 25 years down the road?
Yeah.
That's not right.
No, agreed.
Right? And so that's where the focus is.
Well, that brings up an interesting thing, and we're kind of jumping all over, but an interesting thing is the plea deal. everything that I've ever done has gotten bled out eventually, right? Like, but one of the things that my defense attorneys would say to me is like, we can take this to trial, but if we lose, then the judge is going to throw the fucking book at us. Yeah, and it's like,
I don't like
well,
that.
I mean, I was guilty, but in my head, I'm like, what if I wasn't? That's a fucked position. Like, well, just say you're guilty and they won't throw the book at you. Yeah, I'm like, how does that? That's really, instead of like saying, hey, I did this, but let's find a middle ground. It's really like saying, if you don't say you did it, it will be a lot worse right now. And if I didn't do it, I'm almost kind of pressured into saying, okay, I did do this less thing that I didn't do, but right, that means I'm not going to go to jail now, so you'll let me out. And, you know, I think as someone who's got arrested, the second part of that is plenty of times is like, you know, everybody's scared to go to jail. Like, even one day, right when they go in, like, man, I can't do one day.
Right, right, right.
I can't do one day. Once you go a couple times, you're like, I'm not admitting to that. You know what I mean? And doing a year. Let's fight this a little bit longer because I can do it. But I do feel like that plea deal that works in the prosecutor's favor to pressure me to say I did something, even if I didn't do it.
Well, so let's be clear. The prosecutor in our system holds all the power. I know people are like, the judge does. The judge doesn't hold the power. The prosecutor does. The prosecutor is who charges. The prosecutor didn't dismiss. If you've ever had a ticket fixed, a speeding ticket fixed, they amend it down into a defective muffler sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like someone goes out and looks to see if you have a muffler.
No.
Right. That's a fiction.
I've always heard you get like one defective equipment a year
Well, and it's not like I've got special words. I'm like, I go into the prosecutor and I'm like, I wink and like, give me the Saturday special or something. And they're like, okay, he wants a defective equipment. It's all bullshit. But the reality is they have the power to do that.
Yeah.
If right now any of my clients, this prosecutor wants to dismiss it, I can't even tell them not to dismiss it. They dismiss it.
Yeah.
So the power is there and the charging power is there. And so then we take into account what else? The system wants finality. You don't like risk, Laszlo. You may like risk, but most people don't like risk.
No, right, of course.
They want to be done. They only have a certain amount of money.
Right.
So and the victim wants, generally the victim, whoever it is, they want some type of certainty. And so the result of all those factors come clashing together into a system. This usually results in people wanting to resolve it by agreement. They'd rather know what's coming than not. The thing you're talking about, first of all, if you have to be sentenced by a judge, the judge wants to know, are you accepting responsibility for this? That's part of the deal.
Right.
And if you go to trial, you have a constitutional right to go to trial, and judges will say there's no trial tax to see what happens at trial. There's a trial tax.
Of course.
There's a trial tax because you're putting a jury through it, you're putting everyone through it. They're going to absolutely do that. But I understand. So do I ever have people plead guilty that didn't do it? I don't think that is a rare occasion generally. And again, a lot of stuff that I deal with are people that know the other people. So it's not even a question of really what happened. It's really more why it happened. Was it self-defense? Is the person kind of exaggerating on what they're saying happened? It's not like what I think people typically think of. Some guy robs bank and they've picked guy A and it's really guy B, but guy A is going to take a deal on it. I don't see that very often anymore. So
I guess we only see it in documentaries, right?
Correct.
And we see
where you're
the
like,
death
oh,
penalty.
Like I just watched
the death penalty off the table as long as you've been. How many times have I seen that in a true crime thing? They're going to charge you with they're going to give you the death penalty unless you admit guilt. Then they'll take the death penalty off the table. That happens in these big nationally, talked about crime cases all the time. And I'm like, why do we use the death penalty as a tool to get people to plead guilty more than we actually execute people?
That's
by
right.
far, right?
That's right. Well, the hope is on the death penalty cases. And I was asked to train for death penalty cases and I didn't want to because I do a lot of murder one cases and that was enough. These are murder ones with death penalty I didn't want to deal with. Usually the victory in a murder one death penalty is life without.
Life in prison.
But the reason it is the evidence, well, I don't want to say always, but more recently probably, is overwhelming. And the question is, why did they do the crime? Not did they do the crime? The stuff you're talking about, which can still happen, hopefully happens less with technology, is where they just pick like random black guy off street and says, you did it. And we're going to get your ass, and now you better plead, or otherwise we're going to electrocute you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking up at a system like that, and you're like, I'm screwed 100% no matter which way I go, you're going to do what you can to preserve your life.
And they just did it to Brian Koberger. He was going to face the death penalty. And they said, okay, well, if you plead guilty to murdering these students, then we'll take the death penalty. I feel like you do see it. And they use that a lot in these pleas. It's like, look, if you plead to this, which is exactly what you're talking about, Laz, it's like, well, which is it? What is the punishment for the crime? What is
I guess
the crime
when you see it from like a defense and watching a documentary thing, you're like, look, either you got the evidence or you don't.
Right.
So if you think you got it and that's enough to kill me, then go with it.
What's the punishment?
Prove it.
What is the punishment?
You know what I mean? But instead it's like, well, we got it, but
Well, but is it worth it? Is it worth it to the victim's family, for example? Is it worth it to the system to have a person stand up and say, yeah, I did it?
Sure.
Because then people know that's right. What now, presumably I could say yes, and I'm like really mean and I said yes. But a lot of times in these factual basis and guilty pleas, people have to stand up and walk through what they did.
Right.
That's generally the factual basis that you'd want in a case like that. So there's no question when I'm looking at this guy that he's not bullshitting me. This guy did it.
Yeah.
And, there's a benefit to that, and I think the system is willing to pay for that benefit, to willing to go from death to life without. But I absolutely agree with you on other stuff. For example, in cases that aren't death penalty, but I have, if I file a motion to suppress, let's say they find something my client shouldn't have had, but they shouldn't have searched the car, or I want a preliminary hearing, prosecutors have the right to say, I'll tell you what, David, that's fine. You want to play lawyer? No plea agreements. If you file that motion to suppress, if you made me go through a prelim, I'm not giving you a plea deal.
What?
And I'm like, dude, how's that fair? How's that fair? And right. They're like, I can do that.
So
and
who agrees? When you file that motion to suppress, who decides whether or not you suppress? The judge, right?
Right.
So why is the prosecutor even? But they know you did it, and so they're like, hey, fuck you. You just got this evidence taken away. So now we're going to take away the plea.
No. If I get the evidence taken away, I win. What they say to me is, if you file that motion to suppress, if you even make me go through a hearing to see if the judge should suppress the evidence, no more pleas. So if you lose that, screw you. You're not getting a plea offer at all.
Right.
That's the pressure. That's the pressure that I see. Or another one will be, I got a client in and I'm trying to get him out on bond and he's got $10,000, but he doesn't have $10,001. All right. So all of a sudden he's a danger to the community. And then I'll get a probation offer later. So the prosecutor will set the bond or push for a high bond. Right. And then I'll get a probation offer later. So the pressure there is if you want to see the street, you got to plead guilty. And those are the type of smaller pressures that they don't really do documentaries about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the people want to get out of jail. So you want to get out of jail. You don't have the money to get out of jail. You plead guilty. We'll get you out of jail. That's the type of pressure that bothers me.
Right. Well, and I think that's what I was talking about earlier. Like, it seems like that's a lot. Right. Like, I mean, that it seemed like that would always come to me as I was sitting, you know, the sixth day in county.
Right.
You know, and then the guy comes in, he's like, hey, they said if you pled guilty to a reckless driving and a fray, right. And I'm like, well, I don't know what the fuck a fray is, you know what I mean? And they're like, yeah, just, hey, you can leave and you'll be on probation. I'm like, all right, dude.
Well, that's why, the same thing with the speeding ticket. I don't know if I was speeding or not. I was listening to you guys on the radio. Who knows if I was speeding or not? The officer says I'm speeding, so I can amend it down to a defective equipment, not have points on my license. I guess I can go to trial on it. Which am I going to do?
Well, right. And that's the other thing. If we got rid of this, if people said, we don't like that all these deals are being made and that the prosecutors are saying, you know, if you file a motion to suppress, then we're going to take away your pleas. If we got rid of all the pleas and got rid of and everyone had to go to trial, you talk about the gears of justice being slow. It would grind to a halt, right? Like we could stop the criminal justice system in this country if everyone requested a trial. Could we not?
What 100, you're absolutely right. The system cannot handle it.
Yeah.
They couldn't handle. They can only handle right now, and they're not even.
They're barely handling it right now.
10% of cases going to trial. You're 100% correct. The system would grind to a halt. Nothing would happen.
It's crazy. Right. I mean,
how much of your job is? Well, another thing that happened to me a lot of times when I got arrested was my defense attorney, especially in Detroit a lot, they would be like, we got to get it out of this dude's courtroom and get it into this person's courtroom. And one of the judges that I ended up going to a lot was this lady named, and my lawyer would be like, let him walk Walker. We need to get in, let him walk Walker's court. And when you got in there, there's this old, nice black lady. Yeah, and she'd be like, well, what the hell are you doing, son? Why are you getting, and kind of lecture you, you know what I mean? But like in a preschool mom type of way.
Absolutely.
And he was like, we got to get it out of this dude's courtroom because, you know, his kid got killed by this person. You know what I mean? Like, that was half of it. I felt like my lawyer was like trying to negotiate to get it out of this courtroom into this other courtroom for some reason.
To the extent you get a change of judge, you don't get to choose the judge.
Right.
So in Missouri, like, for example, I get one change of judge, essentially, with trial judge. You don't get to choose who it is. So if you pick one, if I just have the decision all the time with clients, I'm like, all right, here's the deal. The judge is fair, but he's a little hardcore sentencer. She's nice. She'll let you have a trial, but you don't want to lose. The problem is, whichever judge you have, you can say, I want a different judge, but you don't get to select. You know, like, I like number three, but I don't like number seven. You don't get to do that. And that's a big issue.
Okay.
I mean, it's tough, but you're just rolling the dice.
Right. Another question I had, and it's because we kind of got there. And I think a lot of people ask these questions. Two things.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
DUI checkpoint.
Yeah.
I'm driving up to it. What do I do?
I would say don't drink and drive.
Okay, first off. Yes, right. Yeah. First, I mean, right. Yeah, don't do it.
Okay, second.
But maybe I have drugs in the car.
Second, second, Uber. I would take Uber. And here's, and I know, listen, dude, I drink, so I'm not saying don't drink. But in order to hire me, I think where you would probably go from your house, wherever you're going to go to drink or whatever, you'd probably be able to do 50 trips.
Right.
Before you would to get a retainer to hire me. It's just worth it to do the Uber. But let's say you go there. The issue on these checkpoints and the issue on people pulling you over is essentially if they have any reason to suspect you're drinking, which doesn't have to be much, they can start playing with you a little bit to develop more evidence to get you to pull over, to get you to take that breathalyzer test. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Now, in certain counties in Missouri, if you refuse and it's your first time, we can get a diversion on that if you plead guilty on the underlying DUI, but it changes based on where you're at. So it's like I get calls sometimes like, what do I do? I'm like, well, have you been drinking? You know, like,
right.
So the best thing I can tell you is know yourself and know what your limits are. It's surprising to me, by the way, which I never understood this, and maybe I know the answer, is why bars don't have breathalyzers in there.
Some do. There was one once, actually. It had a breathalyzer, and I got a DUI that night. I was testing it. Seriously, we were testing our... But
is there something, like, if you pull... Let's just say, all right, I made a mistake. I've had a few beers. Mm-hmm. I'm driving. I pull up to a DUI checkpoint. You know, because you see on the internet, like, roll on the window this much, hand the license out, and don't say anything. Or don't say anything at all. Never say anything.
Yeah.
How do you approach that situation?
I would say this. Unless you are okay going to jail, don't play the Constitution with the police. Like, they don't want it. Don't play lawyer with the police. They don't want that. If you're acting anywhere unusual, they will take that as a sign of a problem. You know, if you don't follow instructions right, they'll take that as a sign of intoxication. So whatever you do that's unusual, putting the window up like this and sticking your car through there, stuff like that, they're going to know. Here's what they're going to say in their warrant or whatever it is. They're going to be like, hey, based on my experience, people that don't roll down their windows are shit-faced, right? I mean, they won't say it like that. They'll say it in nice legalese language, and so you're screwed anyway. So that's why I'm saying I go back to don't drink, and then if you do, just do Uber. And then if you go through and you get pulled over, man, there's not – once you're in that moment, there's not a lot I can do to help you. Like, I'm just like – I my client calls in the middle of it. I'm like, well, how much have you had to drink? If you don't think you've had enough, then go ahead and blow. If you're not going to blow over that 0.08, then that's fine. The problem is people don't know their own bodies, I guess. And by the way, it's not like I know mine.
Right.
I don't know what the hell is a point what a 0.08 feels like. I could be having a 0.08 right now, and that was 3 days ago.
So I'm positive I'm well over that. Right, right.
So what if you just get pulled over? Because a lot of people listening might not have, you know, criminal cases pending or whatever and been through, been in cuffs before, but they probably had an interaction with the police that involved getting pulled over, right?
Yeah.
For speeding, I remember getting pulled over in Kansas twice in my early 20s for driving a piece of junk. It was two different pieces of junk. But I know that's why they pulled me over, right? And they said, like, the taillight wasn't red enough one time, something like that. I think people are always curious, like, what are my rights in that moment? What are the rights that I should know about? What are the rights I might be forgetting? And like Laszlo said, you know, sometimes you'll hear lawyers say, don't say a word. Well, that seems suspicious in and of itself. It's going to be really hard to just sit there when they say, hi, how are you? And you don't say anything. So what, you know, what do you recommend? And do the cops have a right in that moment to search your car? That's always a big issue, right?
So here's the thing. It's a very nuanced, but when police ask you if they can do something, you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, if they command you to do it, then you have to. So I get clients all the time, the FBI will show up at 6 in the morning. Like, this actually in songs, like 6 in the morning. But 6 in the morning, they'll show up, they'll knock on the door, and you'll answer, and you're drinking coffee in your robe. They'll be like, hey, can we talk? We were like, well, crap, man. I got 3 FBI agents here.
Right.
They all got guns. They want to talk. I guess I have to talk to them.
You're Eazy-E now.
The answer is, right, that is.
Is
6
no.
in the morning. All right, there it is. I grew up Leawood, Northside, so I'm just saying that right now. But you can say no. But the desire, the
but
tension
I always
is not
if I
no.
say no, then he's going to say, okay, well, you said no, but you stay here. I'm going to wait for the canine unit. And then that dumb dog is going to just bark or piss or whatever. Okay. And then they're going to go, oh, the dog... Dog
I think
bark,
the answer is no, and I think the reason why people talk,
right,
this is what I think, and you learn it at some point,
right,
is that they think they're smart enough to talk themselves out of it.
Right, that's right.
Like, I think people in general go, the FBI agent or the cops show up and they go, hey, can we just want to talk to you for a minute. They play that game, right? We have some questions about something, it's, you know, it's really not a big deal, can we just talk to you? You know, there's never been a time that I have been arrested that I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about, right? Like, huh? Right? But you're like, oh,
right.
I could talk my way out of this,
right?
And then you start talking, and you're like, your now you've given them more. They know more than what you thought they knew, and now here you are, and you're stuck. So it's almost like, just say no, and if they say, well, we're going to go get the dog, well, they go get the dog, call you.
Well, so here's the deal. We're talking FBI is not coming over for a traffic stop. If you're getting pulled over on the side of the traffic stop, the police have the ability to investigate for long enough for the reason for the stop. So, by the way, in Kansas City, I think it must be a city ordinance that your tags don't match your car or that your insurance, you don't have valid insurance.
Right.
Like, it's everybody seems to be driving that way. But if you have a broken taillight or they come up with some excuse, now this dim taillight is kind of bullshit, but it's all on video now, so we can check that later. If they're pulling you over for that, they have the right to come and interact with you. They have the right, I believe, to ask for your ID. You got to roll the window down.
That is another question. It's just, you see sometimes people who are on foot and a police officer approaches them and says, what's your name? You know, what's your ID? And I always wonder, do they have to produce an ID just for being out in public?
I don't know the law in the different states, but my general answer is, if you don't want to go to jail, you need to produce your ID.
Okay.
I mean, that's my thought. Now, there may be some, if you want to fight about it and you want to pay me a bunch of money to fight whether you have to show it or not, let's do it. But just know you're going to have to be in jail for a little bit. You're going to be arrested.
I'm with you, because that whole plain constitution, as you put it, that's what some of these lawyers on the internet are telling you to do. And it's like, well, it sounds great. But in the moment, when you start doing that, the cops are just going to get more upset.
Absolutely.
And I feel like they really hold all the power, you know?
They do. And just to be clear, I know a lot of cops, and I've represented cops, by the way. If you want to make, you know, if you want to make a cop a friend of a defense attorney, charge him with a crime. I'm just telling you that right now.
Right.
So I know a bunch of cops, too. And generally, they're good people. Like most of us, it's just good people. They're just coming at the system from a different angle.
Sure.
They want to get through their day. They want to do a good job, whatever. And so if you buck up to their job, you're like, screw you, man. That's where it becomes, I think, more of an issue. And some of these guys, unfortunately, aren't trained, in my opinion, to de-escalate as well as we could. And so what comes as a traffic stop or a bullshit like pedestrian check ratchets up into someone being taken to the ground or worse.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have to go there, but it did. So my advice to people is, if you get pulled over, just cooperate to the extent possible, but know that if you're being asked to do something versus being told, generally you have the right to say no. And I think, Laszlo, you bring up a good point. Most people know what the hell they're being asked about for the most part. That being said, some people don't, and they just want to know. So it's that itch to want to know that gets them to start talking.
Right.
And that's when they start getting in trouble. So if anybody shows up at your door and wants to talk, the answer is, what I usually tell people is, I would love to talk to you, but I want my attorney present.
Yeah, right. Friendly about it. That's your statement in the office.
At what point, because everybody always says that, at what point in any situation do you say, I want an attorney? When do you say that?
If the FBI is at your door, at the very beginning. Don't ever, you can say, I'm David. Hey, nice to see you guys. You want any, pardon me, you want any coffee? But I don't want to talk until my attorney. Well, your attorney's not going to be here at 6 in the morning. Yeah, they will. But the reality is, if the attorney shows up, I'm saying, dude, we're not talking. We're not talking because I got to figure out what the hell you guys are talking about.
Right.
I would say, generally speaking, in order to get through a traffic stop, hand them your ID. They want to make small talk. Be nice about it, but don't ask too many questions and don't say too much. A lot of times people will make goofy observations or they'll just make random comments. And any words you say, the officer is going to be analyzing that. Well, why the hell did he say that? What does he mean by that? And it just keeps them digging more. The best you can do is just be cooperative, whatever. And if you have your insurance card in your glove box and your stash of weed is in there, that's a bad idea. I wouldn't drive with weed, just to be clear. But that being said, if you do, having somewhere where you're going to have to open it up and to be seen, if the officer sees something there or you're smoking pot in your car, now again, this applies a little bit different because Missouri is a little bit different now than Kansas, but if you roll down the window and a billow of smoke comes out, they're searching your car.
Sure.
Right? I mean, there's just a reality of it. And so that's you got to be a little bit more careful.
Well, what if these all sound like things you're saying, cooperate, almost like you're saying, if you haven't done anything.
Right.
But, so let's say you pull me over my car and I know I've done something. There's got to be a different, response to that. Like, if I haven't done anything, I'm like, here's my ID. I'll be nice about it. What are you going to write me 10 over? Whatever. Right? It's fine. But if I'm like, here's my ID and I know I've got a warrant or whatever, or
pills in the car.
I know I could be in trouble for this or, right? At some point, it's probably smarter to be like, yeah, I ain't saying nothing.
Well, I know, but I think you can say nothing without saying nothing. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. If you want to keep asking questions, just say, hey, man, I'm sorry I'm in a bad mood or whatever. I just don't want to talk anymore. What information you need from me?
Right.
Right. If they want to engage you in conversation, you don't have to hit them with the wall of, I'm not going to talk to you. It can be more like, I mean, I'm sure you've been in the situation before, Laszlo, with somebody, and you'd be like, dude, I'm just not in the mood right now. I don't want to really talk.
Yeah.
What can I do? What information do you need? Just shut it off that way. If you want to hit them with the attorney thing, that's when it starts to escalate, and it's not necessary because you can do the same thing without you escalating it yourself. Just, I don't want to talk. So if they pull you over and they're like, hey, do you mind if we search your trunk? Yeah, I do mind that because I'm on my way out, out there. Well, we want to get the dog. Well, then at that point, I would be like, well, you've stopped me for a traffic violation. You've written the ticket. I've given you my my driver's license and my insurance card. We're done with the stop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't drive away, but just so you guys know, the law on that one is, once they're done with their investigation of what they thought, if they were speeding, they got your driver's license and your insurance, and they're done, they can't horse around anymore. They're not supposed to. So what they do is they'll be like, hey, where are you off to today? So what they'll do is the stop will end for what the reason was, and they'll be like, hey, where are you off to today? You from around here or whatever? And they'll start engaging you in a conversation. That's when you need to be like, dude, I'm sorry. Would love to talk. Let's grab coffee sometime, but I'm out.
Okay.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It's they're trying to get you to voluntarily continue that, and at that point, you're going to get screwed if you got something in the car.
Right.
Yeah. And Laszlo probably won't admit this, but the truth is if I get pulled over in the metro, when the cop comes up, as soon as he engages me, I always say, you ever listen to the radio? Have you ever heard of Slim Fast before? That's me. That usually gets your car searched if that's what you're going for. We were talking about.
I think sometimes when you're just straight with them, too, and you just tell them, like you said, and there was a time when I told Slim is driving and, my license, my tag was expired. Mm-hmm. And there was stuff that was expired, and the cop pulled me over. He's like, your tag's been expired for 4 months. And I was like, yeah, man, just write the ticket. And he goes, well, what's going on with it? I'm like, I got divorced. The tag was in my wife's name. I can't get the goddamn thing registered. I'm like, whatever, just write the fucking thing.
So then he
leaves and comes back. He's like, man, I ain't trying to pile on. And just lets you go. Sometimes that's the way to go is just be honest. Like, yeah, it's fucked. And I don't know how to unfuck it, so maybe you'll help me unfuck it.
Well,
I don't know.
And you bring up a great point. Listen, if you've got a body in the trunk, first of all, I do not have a body in the trunk. I just want to say it. But if you got one, you saying, hey, dude, I'm having a bad day. I got a body in the trunk.
Right.
You're not going to get out of that shit.
Right.
But what you're talking about is stuff you've already been caught doing, and you're not making it worse. In fact, the police officers have some discretion on whether they're going to take you in or not. And maybe being friendly with them is going to prevent them from taking you in, or let them use their discretion not take you in and not getting your car towed and not having to pay $400 to get out of a tow lot and stuff like that. So I agree.
But one of the things that bothers me is it seems like, and I don't know how it works, but I just watch a lot of true crime, but it seems like you'll have some sort of unprecedented thing, you know, as society progresses. And so a judge has to, like with DNA, judge has to decide, okay, is a cop allowed to go follow someone around and get their DNA out of the trash river? And a judge says, yeah, you know what? That's discarded. They discarded that DNA. Right. So now every cop in the country is allowed to go follow you around and get your DNA. The one that really bothers, and I sort of understand the logic behind that, honestly, but the one that bothers me and that people have to deal with now is their phones. And it seems like a judge somewhere said, hey, the cops are allowed to hold that phone until they get a warrant because there's an understanding that you might try to erase data off that phone before they get the warrant. That is fucking not right.
I agree.
I mean, that what one judge decided that, so now they're taking our fucking phones, they're downloading because they can always get a warrant. What do they need to get a warrant? Just
probable
say they
cause.
Want one.
Probable cause.
Oh, and they're taking people's phones. You hear about some of these people get their phones taken, or the cops will say at the time of the interaction, let me see your phone. And they go through it in front of them.
That's right.
This happened to my fiance. They had someone trying to break into the house. And then the cops get there. And then they're going through her phone. She's like in tears. And she's like, why are you doing this? And he's going through making comments about stuff on her phone.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So that's not right. So that's a Fourth Amendment violation.
Not.
She's got a right to privacy to that. And they're not allowed to do that. Particularly, they're not allowed to do it without a warrant. The issue becomes the following. Let's say they believe they have probable cause to arrest you or probable cause for that warrant. If they're like, hey, dude, just hang out in the neighborhood until I get a warrant. They're not going to be able – that's not realistically going to happen. So they've got the right, I believe, to hold it until they can get a warrant. Presumably they are. Now, eventually they got to give it away. The issue comes up, which I've seen, is where if you got the face ID on it and they don't want to get a warrant and they just hold it in front of your face and then they start going through your phone, that's a violation there.
Yeah.
So if you're really concerned about that, I guess, and everyone that's now going to change from face ID to code – don't holler at me when you forget your code.
Well, the new Face ID now, though, you have to actually look at it. So if they help, I just keep my eyes down or my eyes closed, it won't unlock.
Right, but mine's on a code. So
it is on code?
Would I have to give them the code?
No.
Well, I'm like, here's the phone, but I'm not giving you the code.
But they have a back door now, right?
They can get it. Usually, I found they can get, now they can get in the phone. It used to be with Apple, they had trouble.
Right.
They seem to be able to
win that fight, though, with Apple, that Apple had to give them a back door into the phone.
The problem with the phone is this. Where else, what other thing do you have in your life that contains a diary of your entire life?
It's 10 times as much information as what's in my house.
Absolutely.
Right? 100 times, 1,000 times.
And it goes back years.
Yes.
Right? You could have text message, photographs, whatever, and stuff like that for years. So you need to be careful. Obviously, photographs, we unfortunately deal with a lot of people that sending things they probably shouldn't be sending or have stuff on their phone they shouldn't be having. So I think
And what if they're using, because I always think when I see these people in these situations and they can't get their phone back and they're mad, like, I want my phone.
Right.
And some of them aren't the actual murder or whatever the case is, but they're a friend, and so like, yeah, we get the phone, and the person is freaking out, like, don't look at my phone, which I totally understand.
Right.
It makes me want to start using a messaging app like Signal where it disappears, keeping all of my photos in the hidden folder that's on the cloud, because if it's on the cloud and not on my phone and the cops download it, they can't. They're not subpoening Apple to say, hey, give me everything off his cloud account, are they?
They can.
God damn it.
I know, dude. I'm sorry. So here's the other thing. They have algorithms or whatever that crawl through the various services, like Apple, Dropbox, all these things. And if they find some images that shouldn't be there, that'll be automatically reported. Now, hopefully, no one here has images that shouldn't be here. So, but I'm just telling you, that stuff happens all the time.
But I think I should have a right to delete my phone while they're going to get a warrant. I mean, this is, I'm sorry, Judge, that it sucks, that it's hard for you to get this information.
Bad, right?
But too fucking bad. You got to get a warrant. You can't come into my house until you get a warrant.
Right.
You can't come to my house with a bunch of feds and come inside and say, hey, don't move. We're going to get a warrant. We're allowed to be here for 3 weeks while we're waiting to get a warrant. You can't do that, but they do it with your phone.
So here's the thing on that. If you do that, you'll probably get charged with destruction evidence. I'm just
great.
Telling you. It could be a hell of a lot better than the alternative. But I'm just telling you, you set yourself up for that. And we get that all the time where someone will be at the door and some guy will like throw his computer in the oven or something. And like, first of all, that doesn't work. We know this for a fact at this point. I know, I'm sorry, dude. But the other thing is, I think you need, if you're worried about privacy, you have to invest in that privacy. You have to set up whatever system you think you need. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't necessarily rely on kind of off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the issue. Or just don't, for me at least, I just don't have anything, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to have to worry about any of this stuff, so I just don't have anything.
It's nothing illegal. It's the idea of these guys that I don't know going through and reading all my old text messages, looking. It's like, that's, you know, even if there's nothing there that's illegal, it's just the idea of them So, having access to my whole life.
So we had a few cases where what they were doing. There was a grow shop down in the River Market, and they sold like bat guana and stuff like that. You were either going to grow like in lights and stuff like that. You were either going to grow tomatoes with the stuff you bought there, mm-hmm. or you were growing weed inside your house.
Right.
It's either one of those things. And what would happen is the officers would sit outside of there and write license plate numbers down, and then they'd go pull your trash. And then they would search through the trash, and if they found something that tested positive for weed or what they thought was THC, they'd get a search warrant based on that.
Okay.
And so what happened in that case is they actually hit a house out in Leawood. This was a well-known case. Hit a house out in Leawood, guns, you know, AR-15, whatever. And it turns out that something had tested. It was a false positive for, like, it was tea leaves or shit like that.
Right.
The issue with the trash is, and I completely agree with you on this one, Slimfest, is the following. You know, it is my trash. But my assumption when I put it in the trash is it's going to go somewhere
else. I'm discarding it.
It's going somewhere else, mm-hmm. and no one's going to see it. Or if someone sees it, they're not going to be able to connect it to me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the law is held that once you've lost your right of privacy once you put it out in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, man. That's
and
a
I
tough
sort
one.
Of understand that. That part, I don't. I wish we didn't. Right. Sure, you know, give us more rights. But I do sort of understand the logic behind, hey, you discarded it. You don't want it anymore.
What
but
I don't understand is, I mean, different. With the exception of the DNA, grabbing a cigarette and getting the DNA. Right. But if it's evidence that's in the trash, excluding DNA, isn't the easy argument is like he didn't put it in that trash?
Except
it's his trash, but it's open to the public.
So what they'll do is they'll be like, well, first of all, it's his DNA or someone else's DNA that shouldn't be there, and it's next to, you know, a utility bill with your name on it, or it's next to your credit mm-hmm. card that you threw out, or it's next to something. And that's the problem is also they will have some officer testify they saw you put the trash out there. They washed it, and then they picked up
okay,
the trash.
Okay, got it.
So you've got that identity there. But the reason I agree with you, Sylvest, is I understand the idea of throwing it away. You don't have a right of privacy. On the other hand, when I throw it away, my expectation of privacy is it's going to get to a landfill.
Yeah, you should have to go right. find it there. I think that's the right way to do it, because they say once you put it on the curb, well, that's still my yard, dude.
That's right.
I'm you know, that is my property that it's sitting on, and you just went into it. Some judge years ago decided as soon as I put it close to the street that I've discarded it. Well, no, it's still at my house. I haven't discarded it until the guys pick it up, you know, and throw it in the truck.
So you got to get a good shredder.
Yeah, my dad always did. Maybe my dad was up to something yeah. illegal. I don't know.
One of the things, here's a question that I think people ask me. What is the major thing, the one major thing that people get wrong about how the judicial system works? Like in our mind, we have this idea, maybe it's from TV shows or, maybe you know, all these different things. What are we just like, we're like, I saw this on whatever show, and when I say this, it's going to work. And you're like, no, it doesn't work.
So this is a great question. So one of my favorite scenes is in Law and Order. I used to watch Law and Order. And the detectives would be in there, and they're grilling the client, or they're grilling the defendant, and all of a sudden the attorney busts in and is like, everyone shut the fuck up.
Right,
my client's not talking. Okay.
Right.
Well, I've tried that down at 1125 Locust, which is KCPD headquarters, and you can't even get into the first floor to get up to the higher floors to knock on that door. The reality is that the client has to invoke.
Yeah.
I can't call up the sergeant and be like, stop talking to this guy right now. I'm his attorney.
Right.
I'd be like, fuck you, man. Because until he invokes, until right. he says he wants you, we don't
And
have
he
to
should always
to
say he wants you once he's in that room, right? Once this is different than yes. the car. But if they yes. bring you in to question you, make a statement, you don't make a statement without a lawyer, right?
Right. Well, the answer is generally yes. It depends on your level of involvement. Sometimes if you're like there, but you weren't really involved, you can talk not your way out of it, but telling them what happened will actually avoid a lot of problems. Sometimes you're a little bit too close, and my advice there is say, listen, I want to talk to you, but I want my attorney present. And then they're not going to call the attorney and be like, hey, once. And then, so if they were to do that and call me down there and I were to bust through the door, I would say exactly at that moment what the law and order people say, shut up, we're not talking. There's no way I'm going to sit and whisper in my client's ear for 3 minutes while the detectives are listening in
sure.
on some major issue.
Right.
We're going to take a break. We're going to go back to my office. We can talk. Detective, I'll call you tomorrow, and we'll schedule a time to produce, or we'll just tell you we're not going to show
well,
up.
Well, that seems like a big misconception, too, probably from TV and movies, because it seems like in these documentaries, these news stories, once they say, I'll talk to you, but I want my attorney, the cops just go, well, fuck, and they get up and leave. In the movies, the lawyer might come in, and they have a discussion. It seems like it's very rare that once you invoke your right to an attorney, the cops actually still try and get a statement from you. It seems like they give up. They're like, oh, you want an attorney, so we couldn't talk to him anymore. That's what they always say. We couldn't talk to him anymore, so we want an attorney. I'm like, well, you could have talked to him with the attorney.
Well,
they just act like, no, I'm done.
Well, so here's what happens in that. And this is where things get a little bit messy. when you say, I don't want to talk anymore, when you say, I want a lawyer, they're supposed to stop. What right. happens, though, is they'll be like, all right, sometimes, all right, well, that's fine, we'll call an attorney. Are you sure you want, you know, I mean, we're whatever, and they'll start questioning a little bit, and they'll just sit there. Or they'll meander around, and they'll be like, all right, we're going to go talk to such and such now. They'll talk to their partner or whatever. Then all of a sudden, the guy's like, oh, crap, I got to say something. I got to talk my way out of this.
Fill the void.
Fill the void. Yes, that's a big deal.
My defense attorney used to always say, like, do not fill the void, man. It's be tough. Comfortable in uncomfortable silence.
Yes.
That's what he always used to say. Just be comfortable in uncomfortable silence. When they're asking you a question, just say, I want my attorney.
By the way, that's a life lesson, by the way. Les.
Right, yeah, actually, right. And in other situations, too. It's okay to be uncomfortable in silence.
But people can't be, and so then they got to fill the void.
And once, cops know that.
Yeah, and once they fill the void, then all of a sudden, although they're supposed to stop, then all of a sudden you can, I guess, they're saying you can re-engage. He re-engaged me and said he wanted to talk.
I thought that this was like another instance where at some point one of these magic judges, the all-powerful judge, said, look, once they invoke their right to an attorney, they say they want an attorney, you have to stop. So if we have video of that, and we see him saying he wants an attorney, and then you keep kind of hanging around talking, and then he starts talking again, It's thrown out. He said he wanted an attorney. You're supposed to be done. His statement is not relevant.
So it's always in the nuance. Okay, it's always in the details. So here's what normally happens. So I'm sitting down, and you're like asking me. You're a detective, and you're saying asking me questions generally. You know, where's my tattoos? You know, what's my address? Where to go to school? All this stuff. And then you start. All right. So let me talk to you about this girl, so and so. And you're like, ah, crap. And then the person will say, do I need an attorney?
Right, yeah.
Okay, they'll say that.
I hear that a lot in those shows.
Right, so the problem with that is the magic word is not attorney, although people think it is. The magic word is, do you think I should have an attorney? Do you think I should not talk? Once you, if you're questioning, that's not a definitive statement. If you make a definitive statement, then they have to stop at that point. But
I don't want to talk without
an
attorney.
I'm done. You're right, I'm happy to talk. I always say to be nice about it. I'm happy to talk to you, but I want my attorney present. But then if they take you back and you're in a facility, in a holding facility, there's probably some time period I haven't looked at in a while where if you want to say, you know what?
You change your mind.
I changed my mind, dude. I want to talk to
you.
You
do see that,
I think
I guess.
The law is going to allow for that because you have the right to invoke and you have the right, not to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that line is. It's been a while on that one.
Right. Well, so working in Jackson County, I'm sure there's plenty to do.
A lot
and,
to do.
And, you know, we were talking earlier about all these true crime shows and documentaries. Have you had moments in your career where you're like, they could make a documentary about this. This is a fucking crazy case. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. I had a case where my client, this is a long time ago, and I think it was on TV, but just I'll keep it general. My client killed someone that he didn't know in a robbery, and my client's mother turned him in for the reward money.
Oh.
That she then smoked and violated her own probation.
Whoa.
So you know what I mean? And at the sentencing hearing, this is, again, all public, The only thing I could present, because we had to plead guilty because he confessed again to someone else, was I have a picture of him. It's still on my wall, a picture of his mother smoking a crack pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the bottom right-hand corner is a date, because they used to put those. We're all old enough.
Yeah.
We used to buy that.
Yeah.
And that date is 1 month before my client's born.
Okay.
So I said to the judge, here's a picture of someone at a party. It's a mom. In her belly is a child, and that child's going to be born a month after this picture's taken, and by the way, in her hand right now, that she's smoking a crack pipe. She's being photographed smoking a crack pipe at a party while pregnant, 8 months pregnant. Does it surprise you that he's here in a defendant's chair 18 years later?
Yeah.
So that would be an example of one.
And what does the judge say to that?
I mean,
is there any sympathy? You know, is there something like, all right,
Yeah. So there's one where we accepted responsibility for it, and we were able to get a date where he could see the street again. Mm-hmm. The concern was he was going to get life without her. They were going to stack him or call him running wild, the armed criminal action and the murder cases, to take it way off into forever. So we were able to get it, and he's going to get out.
Well, how do you feel about that? Because that's another thing. You see people who are on the run, you know, they don't get caught for years, and then they catch them 20, 30 years later, and they say, okay, well, you murdered your wife, so you get 10 years, because when you killed her in 1977, that was the punishment. Obviously, we've increased prison time and punishments over the years to the point where, like, seems like so many people now, it's like life without parole, because no one wants to be responsible for someone that gets back on the street and hurts someone again. How do you feel about these longer sentences and basically saying, we're just going to lock people up forever?
I've had a long time to think about this. And you deal with these issues internally. What does justice mean? So here's my thought process. Some people need a timeout, dude. Mm-hmm. They need it. Their just life is so batshit crazy. They're running around. It's like there's a scene. I forgot that guy, Ray Liotta. Mm-hmm. He was in a movie where he was making, I think he was making cocaine or heroin balls. Do you guys remember this? And he was seeing the helicopters flying over.
Goodfellas.
Yeah. So he's running crazy. He's like, right. He's running to his girlfriend, his wife, his family. Right, yeah. He's making pasta. He's doing all this shit. And he needed a timeout, okay? Right. And some of those guys just need to be a timeout. And sometimes that needs to be a prison timeout. But I think that it's a diminishing returns. And so after, like, let's say 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years at the most, I don't see what the benefit is unless you're just saying that I never want them out.
Because they're a danger to society. If right. we see a 17-year-old kid who just walks into a bathroom at school and kills 3 other kids and then sits down and he tells the cops, I like doing it.
Yeah.
You're like, right. you probably should never be back out on the streets. Right.
Well, but then the other side of that, though, is we're all a product of our experiences. And so we are all here today because of something we did in the past. Sitting mm-hmm. here right now, whatever that is, and things a lot of times outside of our control. And so to what extent do we incorporate that in? In my case, this one I was talking about, I mean, his mother's smoking a crack pipe while she's 8 months pregnant. I mean, what the? So, right. all right, so I understand the safety of society. But on the other hand, how much are we punishing this kid? He didn't have control over that. Did he pull yeah. the trigger? Yes, he pulled right. the trigger. But my God, the 17 years before that, it wasn't on him.
Right. right. Yeah, you can have sympathy for someone, and I would guess that you're thinking, could this person come back out and not kill people again, right? Whereas some of these people, it's not common. I mean, it's so rare right. that they make TV shows about it, but people that just are like, I like killing, that was fun. And you're like, okay, well, we can't right. fix that. And I can have sympathy that maybe something went wrong in your life. Certainly something is wrong in your brain now, and we don't know how to fix it, unfortunately. But you don't need to be back out on the streets.
So I've had a few clients, and it's been rare, mostly public defender clients, that had multiple bodies on them.
Mm-hmm.
I had one client that when he would use PCP, he would kill people.
Mm-hmm.
He was the nicest guy. When he wasn't.
Except for when he was on PCP.
Except he was on PCP, but I never met him when he was on PCP. He was in jail at the time. The nicest guy ever. So, all right. So what do you do with that guy? I think maybe a society could decide, and they wound up deciding, that he should live, but he needs to live in a prison situation because the danger to society is too much. But the reality is most of the people I've represented that have killed somebody, they don't kill anybody else ever again. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I find the recidivism right there, and someone look it up or whatever, is probably a hell of a lot lower than some of these other crimes.
Sure.
Right. So people are like, oh, the shit, that's
but we
so
lock them up for 60 years them. Anyway.
It doesn't make sense. And we lock them up in inhumane conditions generally.
Exactly.
And they're not able to to make a life for themselves, even in the prison system. And that's also a problem. Let's educate people. Give them a reason to live, if you will, within that. Maybe we have to confine them, but that doesn't mean we have to dehumanize.
Right. Something right. changed in society because obviously back in the 70s, even yeah. in Texas, they said you get 10 years for this or whatever. Something has changed over time. Something's and we've changed. Just gotten to this where this is normal. Oh, you were in a robbery, a botched robbery, you're 18, whatever. You shot someone, they died.
Right.
65 years to life or whatever.
Right.
And I look at that and go, what good does that do?
Yeah, right.
Like, it doesn't. Is it just it doesn't justice anything. For the victim?
Well, I think that a lot of times you're probably making the decision. We're just making the decision on the other side now, but it's like, is it rehabilitation to try to get someone to become a better person and a functional part of society, and how do we do that? Or is it pure punitive?
Well,
and I think we've kind of sided as a country now. It's punitive. It's not rehabilitation right. anymore. And the second part of that is something we talked about earlier. And I know you kind of push back on it, but I find it hard to believe. But, you know, prosecutors and cops don't necessarily, and I don't know if they find it their job to do this, to find out the truth.
Mm.
I feel like their job is to get a conviction. Where it's almost like they've turned the prosecutor's job into the defense attorney's job. The defense attorney's job is, I don't even know if you did it or not. What I need to do is defend you to the best of my ability under the law, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And I feel like the prosecutors are no longer like, we need to find out what happened. They're like, you've been charged, and now we need to get a conviction. And it, of all the stuff you see on TV, and I'm sure it doesn't happen all the time, but it's like, we had this evidence, but we decided not to give it to the defense attorney. Yeah. And you're like, come on, man. Then you knew it would cause a problem. You knew that it would give the defense attorney something to bring up in court, or else you would have given it to him. But you just kept it anyways. And that, to me, if I found out that you kept any sort of information from a defense attorney, that's reasonable doubt.
Well, yeah, isn't a Brady violation like an automatic throw it out?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Right. Well, the issue is whether, so it could be a violation, and the question is whether or not it it prejudiced the defense. So I've had cases where we've shown violation, and they're saying, well, but he pled guilty anyway. So what if 90% of cases resolved by guilty plea, and my guy stands up with the evidence we had to go over beforehand the discovery and says, I did it. And then what if, and we had this before in a case, where they withheld stuff from us.
Right.
But my guy still stood up and did it. We found in a police station outside of Kansas City where they had like an oh shit file they were keeping, like a private little file on destruction of evidence. We found that and had it up on the stand in front of the judge. The judge's like, God, this is really bad, but he pled guilty. In response to your thing, Lazo, what I will say is this. Most prosecutors and police officers that I know and deal with, and by the way, this is not because I'm going to go play golf and have sex with them.
Because
I don't play golf. I told you is the following. They believe in what they're doing, and they believe that they can get a conviction when they file the charge. I don't believe they would file it if they didn't think they would get a conviction. However, I think at some point it's got to be hard waking up knowing you have such power to impact lives and the ability to realize you may have made a mistake.
Right.
Dude, that's got to be serious. So what if you're in the middle of a case, the victim says, you've told the victim this guy did it or whatever, and we're filing it and we file it and whatever. And then something comes up.
DNA evidence that they want to reject.
And you're like, we all buy into our own bullshit all the time in life and everything
like
we do.
A confirmation bias.
Right. But we do that in everything we do in all aspects of our lives. And prosecutors are not immune to that. The best prosecutors I've had that I've been in front of are prosecutors where something comes up. I had a terrible case where a child was killed, violently killed. It was awful, awful case. And I remember this prosecutor right before trial was talking to a witness, and the witness said something to say that someone else was in the house, even though everyone else has said no one else is in the house. He could have kept that private. I remember this still to this day. He wrote a letter, sent it to us, and disclosed it. The best prosecutors are the ones that are willing to make themselves vulnerable in that situation.
Right.
So we talk about fill the void or not trying to fill the void. We all have this desire to do. That's one thing that I think makes people great, if they can not fill the void. The other one is if they're willing to make themselves vulnerable and say, you know what, I might have fucked this up. And I'm willing to come out and say that. And that's right. Okay. It doesn't mean everything else I've ever done in my life is wrong.
Right. Yeah. Because, but we've kind of put, as a society, put that pressure on prosecutors to say, get the conviction, don't stop at trial and be like, well, wait a second, that makes sense. Yeah, why don't I look? What'd you say? Because, boy, that's, we didn't think about that. We should look at it. But that, I feel like that should be their job. It's like, yo, we didn't know that.
So who?
Let
so,
us look.
So here's the other thing. Who are the prosecutors and who are the public defenders generally? And this sometimes is where these things come up. When I was single and out of this, I left tax law, when I was single and I could spend the night at the Jackson County Detention Center visiting clients and go to Chubby's on Broadway and have a patty melt at 2 a.m. at the time.
Right.
I could do that, man. I was single. I didn't have children, nothing. I could afford to do it. But imagine, I'm older now. I've got family and the whole bit. Right. I couldn't do that. The prosecutors and the public defenders, generally speaking, are relatively young and have very little life experience.
Right.
And I think that is a potential issue. And they generally, people aren't being paid enough to stick around in that career forever. And as a result of that, you keep getting new prosecutors and new public defenders that don't have the life experience, and the same mistakes keep getting done. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but hopefully I've made less mistakes now that I'm a little bit older
sure.
than I was when I was in my 20s.
Sure.
But imagine everyone that's making these life-altering decisions for people are in their late 20s, yeah, early right. 30s. I mean, yeah. dude, that's a scary thing, but that's the reality because that's the salaries that are being paid and those are the positions that are being offered.
Right. Yep. So let's go to – we don't want to keep you too long because I know you got to get going, but
– wait, I'm billing you for this.
Okay, yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay, thank you.
So this celebrity story with David, that, have you heard about this at
no,
all?
No,
so
no,
there's this
sorry.
Guy. He's a celebrity. He's a singer. And he's on tour.
Uh-huh.
And his Tesla gets towed out of the Hollywood Hills and gets taken to a yard. He's in the yard for a while. They smell something awful. They open up the trunk to the Tesla, and there's a decomposed body that's been Ooh. Wrapped up. It's a girl. They find out 13. You know, there's some sort of – the internet has now tied them together as knowing each other and, you know – what is the, I guess, one, there's two questions here. If I have a, I'm on tour, my car's here, and a body ends up in it, right?
Right, right.
And it's at the tow yard.
That's a bad fact, by the way.
It is, right? But is what's the first thing I do? And second, part of that is, how much does the internet and the media play into that conviction already? Because, like we were talking about earlier today, there's already people on TV like, why isn't he arrested yet? Why isn't he arrested yet? Because the media and us, you know, we all have an audience now. We're all part of the media.
Yeah,
we have,
yeah.
you know, Twitter or whatever. We get to be a part of that. How much does that drive, you know, a prosecutor to charge somebody?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I will say it is a bad fact to have a dead body in your trunk, and so you want to avoid that. Lab.
Right,
so
yeah,
please,
of course.
I just
right.
want to make sure you're right, all aware right. of that. You want to avoid that. The other thing that will happen sometimes, I thought you were going with it, is if your car is towed, a lot of times the officers will do what's called an inventory search. So they go into all throughout your car to do inventory search to say, like, hey, just want to make sure we had everything right so nothing's stolen. But they're doing that to get in the car to see what's there. But obviously, if there's a smell there, they probably have the right to investigate. And I don't know if they got a search warrant. But going on to this other part, prosecutors are human beings, and they're political human beings, and they get elected. And a lot of times, if you have enough people screaming loud enough, that's going to have an impact on the charging decision. That's number one. With regard to what you're saying, in terms of why hasn't this guy been charged, it seems so obvious. There's a dead body in the trunk. What I do find with the media almost 100% of the time gets it wrong, number one, because they don't get the full story. They just don't have the time to investigate it. And number two, we're fed some snippet, some one little aspect of the story. And my snippet that I'm getting is different than your snippet.
Right.
It's different than your snippet. And we're all looking at this thing, and we're all going to fight to the death about whose position is right, and we're not even fighting with the same facts. And that
right.
also creates a major just shitstorm for people, because right now, I don't know, with the Kirk thing, the gentleman that got killed, you know, people fight, regardless of your position on that, people are fighting about that. But I'm learning that the algorithms of what you're saying about this guy maybe are totally different
oh, sure.
than what I'm being pushed on.
Right.
The
you
guy.
Think he's an evil white supremacist, yeah. and I think he's just a Christian man who likes
right,
to
yeah.
have discussions
right.
with
right.
people on the other side.
Right, right. And so we're fighting over something, and we're not even fighting with the underlying facts. And I think a lot of times that happens in criminal cases a lot. So, but I will say, if you have a dead body in your trunk,
right.
you've got some explaining. I will say that.
Right.
I
think, yeah, right. I think, but I if think, now the story is that, you know, that car was parked on the Hollywood Hills. He hadn't been around it in a while. That car had been in the lot for a year or whatever. I mean, there's some stuff where you're going to be like, hey, yeah, I left the car there. I wasn't in it.
Right, right. I agree. That's where probably DNA and stuff like that's going to come into. I don't know how he's going to get out of that. I am curious though, just because you brought it up. What is the internet saying?
They found old social media posts of the two of them together, and they have that former Orange County prosecutor who's always on TV. He's on 2020 stuff like that, and he was saying that he thinks that part of the issue with this case is that there's so much evidence to go through. They have to find out one thing. When she went missing in April of 2024, she was like 12, I think. Oh, wow. They have to figure out if she was 13 or 14 when he was talking to her, because it's different laws in California. He said there's so many different things that go into it, and they don't want to charge him and have something wrong in the paperwork where a good criminal defense attorney, because this guy's pretty successful, he can hire someone good, presumably, could come along and say, oh, look at this, you charged him right here with having illegal contact with 13-year-old, which is this law in California. She was 14 when he talked to her, so you know. He said there's so much stuff for them to go through that they want to make sure they get it right before they detain
him. That's an interesting thing, and kind of what I was getting to. It feels like the media can push the prosecutors to charge someone. Like, we need to get this done. It's a big story. But I think when I see stuff in, like, L.A. maybe, or, you know, they said the Hollywood Hills, I think those cops and prosecutors are like, let's get it 100% right.
Correct.
Let's take our time. And people are like, they should charge them already. And it's like, no, because this is going to be on TV. They have a little bit more of an insight to what that Hollywood arrest is going to look like. And if they don't have, they know this guy can afford a good attorney, right. And I guess you'd agree with this, money will get you a better defense.
It certainly can.
Right,
can.
And so
I don't know about always, but it absolutely
right,
can.
Right, sure. I mean, you know.
But here's the deal on that, and I see that here too. The outrage at someone, you know, a deceased, anybody in a trunk is awful. That outrage builds up, and I want satisfaction of that outrage right now.
Right.
But that's not the prosecutor's job. The prosecutor's job and the good ones, and we see it here too, the Chiefs shooting, the parade shooting, I think we saw a delay there. The prosecutors and the police need their time to do an effective job, because the ultimate test is not how quick they charge. There's no law that gives them extra points for doing that. The ultimate test is in that courtroom, and they need to have all their ducks in a row. And I want that out of the system. Give them time. I guess we know where this guy is going to be.
Yeah,
you know, the other issue that I've had, and I've had a case like this, is the time of death. You asked about where people get it wrong. And people, the ME will come in and be like on TV, wow, I think he died at like 3:16 a.m. Yeah, and they're like, bullshit.
Like a turkey thermometer. Yeah.
Right. They don't know when that. I mean, they have no concept of when this. I had a client one time. It was a murder case, and someone was found naked and dead with my client's seminal fluid in their various part of orifices. I guess I can say it. It's the internet.
Found his semen
in her mouth and in her vagina.
Right.
And so the issue was, when did the woman die? Did sex equal death? Because if sex equal death, I will tell you, you both are serial killers, right? Mm-hmm. We'll say that.
Right, sure.
Thank you for that. I worked on that joke. I didn't get any response to that. But the reality was, how do you determine the time of death? So what they would do, they looked at the semen swab, seriously, in the mouth, to determine how many live
semen.
How much sperm were in there to make a determination of time of death. And even that was inaccurate. It turns out semen can persist in mouth for like 3 days or 4 days. There are actually studies on this.
And that's your job, is to look some of this up, right?
Yeah. I got to look this up. Or, I mean, how do you even get into one of those studies? I think that would be the other question.
Yeah.
But that was one of the issues. It's actually studies, persistence of semen. And so the time of death is a big deal. So I don't even know where they would place the time of death. The best they can do is say the last time we saw this person.
Right.
Unless you see a video of them going into the trunk, I don't know how you
figure that out. May or may not have, because it was a Tesla. That's one of the things being theorized, is did this Tesla record the person putting this trash bag in the trunk, because it's got eight cameras.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So, but could that have been deleted? Does Tesla save that stuff? You know, that's.
By the way, I will say this: if it's my client, they will have video going back to 100 years. If it's against my client, if it's for my client, they're like, we have a 90-day deletion
yeah,
policy.
Right, yeah, right.
It's all deleted.
We just deleted it, man. I'm so sorry. You would have come here 3 seconds ago.
You know, I find all this fascinating. I do have a personal question for you, because we've talked about it over the years. And you can tell me, because I feel like I did the wrong thing and I could be a millionaire right now. But I want you to at least tell me the truth. How long ago was this? 10 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it's got to be by now.
All right, let's say 10 years ago. I'm leaving my house, right? I have my youngest son. He's in preschool at the time. I'm taking him to preschool. There is a garbage truck in front of me, right? And a police car comes by me. I live on a cul-de-sac. And it turns around and it comes... And it comes up next to me, and I think, oh, it's going to tell the garbage truck guy to move because he's blocking traffic. It rolls down his window, and it says, hey, are you? And I'm like, yeah. And he says, I need to pull you over. I have a warrant for your arrest.
Uh-oh. Right.
I say, okay. So I pull back into my house. I get out and I talk to him. And he says, you didn't pay an expired tag.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I paid that. And he's like, no, you didn't. And here's the warrant. And so I pull up my email where I had paid it. And I'm like, I paid this. And he's like, no. And what I see is it's confusing, but there's two different VIN numbers.
Okay.
So what happened was a police officer pulled me over, wrote for an expired tag, right?
Right.
But didn't check the VIN number, and it was my second Chrysler 300 of the same color.
All right, all right.
So he just wrote it down as what it was still registered, as opposed to my new paperwork hadn't come from the state yet.
Mm.
So he wrote down, when I paid this VIN number, it didn't cover the old VIN number.
All right.
So he says, look, you know, that's your car. I'm like, it's not my car. He's like, well, you had to pay the ticket. I'm like, I don't own the fucking car. Like, why would I pay a ticket on a car I don't fucking own? It doesn't make any sense. So we're going back and forth. He's like, look, you didn't pay the ticket. It's a warrant. We're doing a warrant. And he arrests me.
Oh, jeez.
Not only does he arrest me in my front yard, he shackles me, puts me in the back of the car, drives me to Overland Park, right? Makes me post $500 bail.
Oh,
drives me home. Right. Mm. And then as he gets out, he goes, as I'm looking at this, he's like, it's clear to me, you know, the cop who pulled you over was a rookie cop. You should have told him you bought a new car. And I'm like, why would I even think like I'm not trained in? Like, it didn't even come up. Like, why the fuck would I do that? You know what I mean? Like, how does that make any sense? And he goes, well, look, man, you know, not your fault, but it's certainly your problem.
Mm.
And so after that, you know, the Overland Park police chief at the time, I talked about on the radio, he called, apologized, wrote this thing. But at that point, I've since seen detective shows, even Bosch, where somebody got arrested, right? And they didn't do it. And then, you know, the lawyer there is like, we're going to sue them for everything.
Right, right.
I was just curious, at that point, had I sued them, what would have happened?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I'm sorry, dude. I'll give you a million. Well, I don't have $1 million, but I would give you a million. Here's the issue, and I see this all the time. I have clients that are wronged constantly, even like things like this. I mean, what saddened me about that, in addition to you being taken into custody, although it made for good radio, I guess, is your kid's in the car, right?
Yeah, yeah, right. He saw me get arrested.
That's fucking awful. That being said, I see people getting wronged all the time, and there's no remedy for the wrong. Unless the cop beat the shit out of you, right? And even then, you might not have gotten, you know what I mean, if you would have resisted or whatever. And so there's no that I'm aware of, and we don't do this type of work, but I get calls like this all the time where someone's shackled, they're put on the ground, maybe they made a mistake, maybe they find out later they made a mistake, and there's no remedy for it. There's no, you can't, I don't know, I've never heard of it.
There's nothing there.
I've never heard of it, so I'm sorry, dude.
No, that's okay, but I look back at it and I think, man, you know.
Well, but see, what I would have happened there, what I would have wanted to see are officers in these situations admit to the mistake, which it sounds like they a little bit.
Actually, he did and said they stopped doing those sweeps.
But also, coming out and like, all right, what can we do to deal with your kid? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like that type of stuff. When the officers act and the prosecutors act, it's going to have impact beyond what we see. And I think we have to be cognizant of that. And then if there are mistakes made and that happens, it should be more than just, oh, dude, sorry, I screwed up, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a little much. And imagine, God forbid, that it was really even more physically painful to you, emotionally painful. Let's say you lose your job, you lost your car because it got towed, you didn't have the money to tow it out,
right.
Your dog dies because you're in jail. I mean, like, all this shit happens, and there's no recourse there, and there's a lot of times not even an apology, and it leaves people pissed off. You're still pissed at it over 10 years.
Right, yeah.
Right? I'm saying we need to, that's...
Right, well, I think you make a good point, because here's the thing that I thought. When they brought me in, right, I had the $500 to bail out. Okay, so I've got it. But what happens if I didn't?
Yeah.
So let's say I can't bail out, so I've got to stay. It's a Friday. That means I probably got to stay Saturday, Sunday, and I'll see a judge maybe Monday, right? Before they even have any idea if they've got the wrong number or not, which by the time I get to court on Monday, that's not even a discussion yet that they've made a mistake. It's just you're being arraigned for not paying this ticket. Do you want to pay the ticket? And you can go home now, right? You're like, well, fuck. Or not, you can go back in there and wait for your... And then, so now, think about that. So now, let's just say it's Monday or Tuesday, Wednesday, before a lawyer comes out and straightens it all out, right? Now, my kid's at home. They probably took him to CPS, right? Because dad's arrested,
right?
I'm working a job where they're like, you know, hey, you missed work. Doesn't matter.
Right, right.
We're like, no, but I got falsely arrested. Like, okay, who cares? You're fired, right? So I've lost my job. I've lost my kid. I don't have money to go get him out of the CPS system, right? Mm. I still got to go to court. I got to get a lawyer to prove that you guys screwed up the paperwork. And then you're, and by the way, this just happened to me. But now you're in Baltimore and everybody I know has had some sort of bullshit like this happen to them. And you're curious why they get pissed.
Yeah.
Like, here we are, right? Like, I don't need a lesson to tell me why those cities sometimes explode.
Well, and so it's a dehumanization. And I think if the system were to focus more on, and the defense attorneys try to do this, and some prosecutors do too, and police do, but I think we need more of it, start to focus on people as human beings. If you did wrong and the tag didn't match, or he had a warrant, whatever, he might have to act on it. Is there a way of effectuating what he needed to do without making you feel like shit and still, you know, still bothering you? And that's where I see the problem. And a lot of times it's like an us versus them mentality. And that's where we run into serious, serious issues. And it just gets people upset. And there's this low level hum of anxiety and anger that sometimes explodes.
Right.
I would love to see that type of change. I'm not saying people still need to be held accountable. Listen, dude, fucking have insurance, man. I want you to have insurance because you hit my car. I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
And there should be some penalty for that. But all right, let's talk about how that works. Or let's talk about the tags not matching. I pay my taxes. I want you to pay yours. So how do we do that? And when the system interacts with you, how can we do it in a way where it makes you say, hey, you know, I was treated fairly? Most people know they've done wrong, and they're okay admitting it most of the time. It's when they get pushed a little bit, and they're like, you know what? Screw you then, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's where that comes up. And I don't know what that mentality is. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if it's sometimes police officers. A lot of times, in the past at least, have been from the military. You see an awful lot of police officers in the military. It's a different type of attitude.
They're waiting for something to happen.
They're waiting for something to happen. And they're not trained in the military to be, in my opinion, it seems to be police. I mean, they're going out they're in a war situation.
You're chained pit bull.
Now they're coming here. I mean, so how do we change the mentality where you can still be tough, you can throw down if you need to, but you don't have to do that all the time.
Right.
Interact with people and make them feel affirmed, even when they've done wrong. You got to tell them they've done wrong. That's a tall ask, dude, but that's my hope.
Agreed.
So,
David Bell, we could talk to you forever. Hopefully, we will talk to you again.
I would love it, man. This has been great.
Just before you go, your website. What is your website?
WHMLawDB.com.
And you have a podcast, right?
I have a podcast. It's called, thank you so much for bringing that up,
of course,
Lens of a Lawyer. It's on everywhere podcast. And if you guys both sign up, then plus my parents, that'll be like five people. So
And the podcast is about, like, I was reading about it. It's like how to be a lawyer and empathetic. Is that
So what I try to do is this. So a lot of, there's plenty of true crime stuff out there. So what I brought up, Lens of a Lawyer, I put that together because I wanted to explore how what happens in the criminal justice system not only impacts all of us, but reflects all of us. Because there's a lot of things where people are like, oh, that person did that. Somehow there's something other than us. The worst shit I've ever seen and the best shit I've ever seen, we're all capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference.
There's a way to get
there. There's no difference between any of us, in my opinion. And so we explore those kind of themes in the criminal justice system. And I love doing it. I love talking to people. We've had Gene Baker on there, the former prosecutor on there, have a sex offender counselor. We had a former police officer. We have an FBI agent coming on. We just had Dan Ross, another really well-known criminal defense attorney, on how do you represent these people. So, Lens of a Lawyer, I appreciate you.
Yeah, of course.
And before you go, I don't want to leave everybody hanging. So your client who ejaculated in the woman, did he kill
her? Allegedly.
Did he kill her?
So we hung the jury the first time, but the second time we couldn't. So unfortunately,
Think he did it?
Well, I mean, let's just say this. He was in prison when the DNA was developed. He was in prison. So here's what happened, okay? And I used to read these reports all the time. This is now, you know, I'm a true criminal defense attorney.
Right.
I'm like bobbing and weaving around the thing. I'm like, I don't know what. What did you say? I didn't hear you. So all right, so in like he's sitting in prison. This is DNA technology is just getting up. He's sitting in prison on a murder. He's in prison. He's been sentenced on a murder. And the detectives come to him. And rather than not talking, wanting to fill the void, they're like, hey, we want to talk to you. He's like, okay. So they show him this picture of this woman. They're like, do you know this person? No. You sure you don't know this woman? No. Have you ever been to this park? No. Uh-uh. You sure you've never been to this park? You know this woman? No. All right, well, how come your semen is in her, you
that
know,
about, classic move.
And the body's found in the park? And then the way they described it, because this is before the video, is the I think they said suspect's head, like, you know, chin hit the chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so he had that, and then he had another case that I helped him on, was representing him on. We got those split up, and then he was already in prison on a thing. So he couldn't testify,
okay,
which was the problem. So I will say this. if your semen is ever found in an orifice of someone who's deceased, you've got some explaining. I'm just telling you that right now.
This is about right.
Right.
So, all right. So he was found guilty, and that's it. So did he do it or not? Who, you know, I don't know, but I will say that the
trouble seemed to follow him at the
least. At least, you know, we bring this up, and I know you got to go, but you bring it up. I think it's wildly because did you read that book Mindhunter, the FBI agent that came out? There's a story that me and Slim talk about a lot. There's a dead woman in a forest, right?
Right, right.
And next to her is a penthouse magazine with semen on it, right? Wow. Okay. They test the semen. It's this dude. They're like, we got you. You killed her, masturbated onto a magazine. It's all right next to each other, right?
Right.
This dude's like, I didn't do that, right? You know, back and forth, back and forth. They bring in the FBI agent. He's like, it doesn't, the profiler's like, it doesn't seem like this guy's it, right? Like, it's not what we're looking for. They find out that this guy, his wife's pregnant, and she won't have sex with him. So on his way home from work, he would buy a magazine, masturbate to it, and throw it in the woods. Unfortunately, this poor motherfucker threw it on a dead body from his car, and he almost went to prison forever until this profiler came in and was like, it just doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Right? And they're like, finally, they figured it out. But this guy didn't want to tell the cops because he's like, you're going to tell my wife that I masturbated in my car onto a magazine.
Oh, jeez.
Right. And so until it got to this point to where they just couldn't hide it anymore.
Dude, that's a tough choice to make. I'd probably rather go on the right? masturbated in the magazine. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
Be careful where you throw your semen cover even your car.
I would say that's great advice, by the way. So thank you.
Yeah.
That's
be careful where you put your semen?
Yes, I would say that's
Is that a sign on your door?
I'm going to put that. That's going to be my new
tagline. Stop leaving your semen everywhere, for God's sake.
It's going to be my new tagline.
David Bell, thank you so much. Appreciate
this. This is awesome. Thank you, guys.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.